Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Live with Body Pal. Tonight's guest I have with me over here, Miss Katie Reeds. How are you doing this evening, Miss Katie Reeds?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. I do appreciate you being on our show and accepting the invitation.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Oh, absolutely. We're hoping to just sit down and have a really good interview with Miss Katie and learn a lot about her reselling history, her adventures, and how she got started and whatnot. I want to go ahead and say out loud, Gary apologizes for not being able to be here tonight. He did have a family emergency. If any of you are of the praying kind, shoot an unspoken up to the big guy for us, and we would appreciate that. He should be back next week, and we'll be very happy when he's back on the show. We got, check this out. We got Cameron, Gravity Goods is here.
Hey, Cameron.
He says hello. Hey, lovelies. I think, yeah, that's lovelies. Hello, lovely.
I love being a lovely.
Yeah. It's a different category. I don't think I've been in the lovely
like
category before.
Thanks, Cameron.
Oh, Mr. Prison to Profit. Hey, hey, how are you, buddy? I got to meet this gentleman over at the Reseller Rally, and that
awesome.
Was an awesome, awesome debut. Mr. Rick with Unloaded All is here. Thank you, sir. And
hey,
then
Rick.
Twin Flippers is here. Man, they're just pouring in.
Hey, Jermaine and Tremaine. How you guys doing?
Absolutely. I do appreciate everybody coming out tonight and joining us. Katie, if we could, I'd like to start my interviews by getting to know my guests a little bit more on the personal level, more so than the resale level. So I'm going to start my interview out with a couple of lightning round questions. How's that sound to you?
Ooh, lightning round. All right.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Well, my first question I have for you is, do you currently live where you grew up, or have you moved away from there?
Yes. I mean, other than the city, yes. I'm born and raised in Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know lots of people feel like that when they're a teenager, they're like, I just can't wait to get out of this town, right?
Yeah. I went through that too. But I actually, I was a young mom. I was 19 when I had my daughter. So things kind of shift when you become, a parent, and you kind of got to settle down a little bit and figure some things out. So, yeah, not the same city, but definitely, Michigander through and through.
There you go. Good job. Good deal. If you were to go buy your favorite milkshake ever, what would that be? What would your favorite milkshake be?
Strawberry. And it would probably have to be, I know this is weird, but Arby's used to have a really, really good strawberry milkshake. And that, okay. Yeah.
So. What made it different at Arby's than
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't know what made it different, but it was so good. I think maybe Arby's, and then maybe like a super close second would be Big Boy, because they make really good milkshakes too.
I have not been to a Big Boy.
Oh,
is that a Michigan thing?
It's okay. I wasn't sure, because the first time I took Tay to a Big Boy, he was like, I have literally never been here. And he's like, isn't this the guy that's from like the Austin Powers movie?
Right, right.
Like the guy with the hamburger. So I did a Google search when we were at the restaurant, and it is kind of Midwest, but like there's some in California, there's some in Florida. So like they're kind of all over the place, but just not in South Carolina where Tay is, I guess. But he liked the food.
Well, I'm gonna need to test out a strawberry milkshake from Arby's or Big Boy's, whichever.
Yeah,
I pass first.
So good. I don't know if Arby's still does it, but definitely Big Boy will have it. And Big Boy usually does like a strawberry festival sometimes too during certain seasons, so they'll have like all types of good strawberry stuff.
All right, Big Boy is definitely on my to-do list next time I pass one. Excellent. Before we go further, we got Mr. Paul Philly Flipper up in here.
Hey, Paul.
He wants to say, what's up?
What's
and
up?
Annie, thank you, Annie, for coming by. How are you, ma'am?
Annie.
I love my chat. The supporters are awesome. If you were to plan your perfect vacation, this one and the next one kind of go hand in hand, so I'm going to mix them. Let's say if you were to find, how would you describe paradise?
Oh, man.
That may not necessarily be a vacation. It could be in your home to some people. Mm-hmm. But how would you describe your paradise?
So I'm a summer baby. My birthday is actually June 27th. So I love summer. That's like
it's
my season. So For me would probably be like, you know, summer weather year round. That would be awesome. I mean, I love Michigan, but I do like summer weather year round. You know, I think just somewhere paradise for me would be just somewhere where, you know, I'm happy, I'm healthy, my family is good. You know, I think it's less material and place and rather mm-hmm. more like, you know, mindset, mind, body, soul thing for me.
Yeah. The atmosphere and how it makes you feel more so than the physical location.
Yeah.
And I can enjoy that and appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Cameron says, never heard of Big Boy except for Paul Philly Flipper because he's a beast.
Okay. He is really tall. I heard he's tall. You know, Tay's pretty tall, but I hear Paul's a pretty tall guy.
He is tall. And then, yeah, he's a funny guy. Where'd it go? He says, she better mention me in her paradise.
Tay's always in my paradise.
Excellent. Ken, SSK Promos up in here. Hey, thanks so much, Ken, for coming by. We do appreciate that. Well, I think that the paradise answer is perfect in the respect of the fact that I too prefer summer weather. Mm-hmm. Being that you're in Michigan, you get a lot more cold than I do. I could completely do away with the cold and the snow. I don't necessarily want to move to Florida or anything, but mm-hmm. if I could stay right here in Columbus and never see anything below 60 degrees ever again, I'd be perfectly happy.
Yeah, like I agree. I like Michigan, but when we start getting like in the 20s and we start having the winter polar vortexes and stuff like that, it's like really, really, do we really need to do that?
Yeah. No, we don't.
So. Well, we get through it. It makes us tough.
Yeah, y'all don't have the humidity, do you? Talk about down here in the South?
Once it starts getting to mid-July through late August, it can get pretty nasty. It just kind of depends. And it also really depends on the kind of winter we had. Because if the winter was kind of light, then we're going to have a pretty tough summer. And by tough, I mean like it's just going to be hot. We're going to get barely any rain, you know, that type of thing, which kind of sucks for the farmers in our area. Because, you know, Michigan's a big agricultural state. You know, just kind of depends.
Yeah. So, well, that's one thing you can never count on is the weather. It's got its own mind.
Especially in Michigan.
Annie, where are you? Yeah, summer is here at 113. Good Lord. No, I've never experienced 113. Lord. I don't want to. That's too hot. That's too high up there on the Fahrenheit scale for me.
Yeah.
Annie, tell us where you are in the chat if you don't mind, because I'm real Tucson, Arizona.
Oh yeah, Annie's Arizona. That's
dry
right.
Dry heat too.
Oof.
And Ken's with you, Annie. He would love that. He's built for the desert climate.
That's right. He's in Ohio.
Ken's gonna move soon. You heard it here first, folks.
We have the tea.
Yeah, you will. Well, I will say that. Katie, I came across your channel because I started doing research when I was doing looking into Amazon reselling. Mm-hmm. Okay. I started doing Amazon reselling in January, started my account, didn't know how to get started, but a lot of people said you got to just start with books. And so I just looked up, you know, books, what books to sell on Amazon, books to sell on Amazon, eBay, books. And honestly, it brought me to your channel. And I started watching it, and I started finding your tips, your tricks, your reselling videos, and I quite enjoyed it. So that's why I wanted to talk to you tonight, because I was hoping that we could start the conversation centered around learning more about books, but eventually I'm sure the conversation will lead on to bigger and better things. Can you tell the audience too real quick, what exactly got you to start reselling, period, in general? And then how did you get started on YouTube?
Okay, so, wow, I've been on Amazon for like over 10 years. My daughter was actually just like a little toddler when I first started. Oh, I'm sorry, eBay. I've been on eBay for 10 years, on and off as a reseller. But my dad actually had a wholesale store on eBay and sold perfumes and a lot of other stuff when I was in high school. And I always thought it was kind of weird, but we helped him out, you know, we'd help him, you know, make pack up orders and send stuff out and stuff like that. So I always knew about eBay. When my daughter was a toddler, I started selling on eBay just for extra cash here and there and to purchase items, you know, so I was a consumer and a seller. And then in 2019, I had some health problems and I was starting to get burnout in my corporate job. And I kind of was just trying to find a way to eliminate debt, get myself on track to where I could either slowly look at being self-employed or maybe going to a job that maybe didn't pay as much, but made me super duper happy. And then I had, you know, eBay or Amazon as a supplement to, you know, make up for that, you know, lower salary, whatever that, whatever the case may be.
Right.
So in January of 2019, I started getting more serious about eBay and trying to figure out what I was going to sell, how I was going to get inventory, what I was going to do, because eBay was all I knew.
Okay.
Then in February of 2019, one of my friends was moving from Michigan to Utah. Her grandfather passed away, gave me four totes full of books. And I'm a reader and a writer already. I've been writing since 2016, like actually publishing stuff and part of a writing group and seriously writing.
That's cool.
And so books have always been my thing. So I'm like, hey, I know books. I know how, you know, I know what's good books. I know what the, you know, I know the market. I know, you know, a little bit about vintage. So, and a lot of her stuff was vintage. So I started doing all that, going through all the books and listing them on eBay. And then I found Amazon through Rake and Profit. And I'm sure a lot of people in the chat, or maybe you, you know him.
Yep.
And then through him, I met Romer the Romer. And I actually started working for Romer for a little bit. And
admittedly, that is a new name for me.
Yeah. And he taught me a lot about, you know, Amazon. So in connecting with them, I also met Caleb Roth, who's the owner of Scout IQ. And I just like started meeting all these book people. You know, my book network started growing really crazy. And so I started Amazon in March of 2019. And, you know, it's been history since that. I mean, once you make your first sales, you don't, you know, that cha-ching, that first deposit from Amazon, you get addicted. You don't ever want to stop. So.
Right.
After that, you know, I've been able to pay off a lot of debt. Since then I've been able to leave my corporate job and now I work for a nonprofit organization. I'm not completely self-employed yet, but that's still eventually the goal one day. But you know, I go to a job that I love now every single day and I have eBay and Amazon to help continue paying off, you know, my debt and supplementing, you know, things. Cause you know, nonprofit, you do have to take a little bit of a pay cut, but
right.
You know, I'm happy. I love what I do now, you know, and I didn't have that 2 years ago. So I like to say that eBay and Amazon have put me in a position to where I could make a move to make my life a little bit happier and better for myself and my family. So,
well, that's good. I do agree that being happy at your job where it's not work is important. Something you have to go to day in, day out anyway. It doesn't need to be monotonous in order for you to be able to even find enjoyment. So I'm glad you're able to find that in your career.
Thank you.
Something you said really stuck with me because I hear it several times for new resellers. And that is you got a bunch of totes of books and you said to yourself, hey, I know books. And I think that's a theme where if anybody out there listening is a new reseller and you don't know how to get started, one of my biggest pieces of advice has always been go with what you know.
Yeah. Everybody has a niche and you just don't know it. You know?
Exactly. You may not realize it or know it, but just look around your house. What do you enjoy doing yourself? What do you enjoy collecting? Maybe you've got a closet full of shoes that you just had to have, but you never wear them more than once. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, go with what you know. And that's a really good theme. If I could, I'm gonna say hello to a few more people that's showing up. We got Steve with Resell Dojo here. What's up, y'all? And the flipping accountant. What's up, Justin? Hi from Alabama. Big fan.
I got some big fans tonight.
Yeah, you do. Rick's got a question. I used to sell a lot of books on Amazon, but sales have been dropping off a bit for us resellers. While Amazon promotes their own items, especially to the Amazon Prime customers. That's very true. I haven't had a whole lot of luck with Amazon, unfortunately. I mean, I'm not giving up on it. What I find, and this is where I was hoping you could help me, is could you share some tips of how to find, I don't want to make it too broad of a question, but if you only have 30 to 40 minutes to shop, what are some quick tips that would help me find a book that I could pick up to sell on Amazon? Anything I could just, I mean, I hate to say judge a book by its cover, but is there anything I could do to just identify it quickly?
Yeah. So I would say focus on certain genres. So focus on nonfiction, textbooks. Those are things that have a good market already on Amazon, and they have higher profit margins, and you're more likely to, you know, fiction and modern fiction and stuff like that. If you're doing Amazon FBA, the profit just isn't really there. Maybe if you were doing merchant fulfilled, but I strictly do FBA. I decided that Amazon was going to be strictly FBA. I already do eBay and have to pack my own orders for that. I'm not going to do for Amazon too. I never wanted to have all my inventory accidentally end up in a pool together and I get confused and have issues. So FBA is strictly what I do with Amazon. So that would be my suggestion, is focusing on nonfiction, textbooks, religious new age books, like just certain genres. And then the Amazon seller app is free. You can definitely use it in the beginning until you obtain capital. But eventually at some point, just because the Amazon seller app is a little laggy and the market is constantly changing, and you know, Amazon doesn't show, it shows sales rank, but it doesn't necessarily show how often something is selling. And that's the thing with eBay, right? You can look at sold comps and see how often it's selling. Mm-hmm. You can see how many other sellers are out there, things like that. So the thing that I really like about Scott IQ and why I eventually made that investment, I didn't do it right away, but I eventually did make that investment of buying that scanning software, is because it shows something called an e-score, and it shows me how many times it's been selling within a certain period of time on top of the sales rank and the profit and how many other sellers are out there and, you know, all that type of thing. So I guess if you had 30 minutes and you're going in, I'd go straight to the nonfiction, and I'd go to textbooks first if you could sell them. Some textbooks are restricted. Books I know are kind of no barrier of entry to Amazon. That's usually the first thing that you can sell and not have to worry about being gated in. But textbooks are a little different, probably because they have the most fraud and they're the most, they're the most type of book to have fakes out there. But nonfiction and textbooks is what I would dive into first. That's what I go to first when I go to library sales, because library sales are kind of aggressive. You know, there's a lot of other scanners there, a lot of other people there. So it's really the same kind of mindset. Like, the first 15 minutes is probably the most important time when you're at a library sale.
Otherwise, it's all gone within the first 15 minutes.
Yeah. Depending on the sale, you know, I mean, if you're out in the middle of nowhere and nobody knows about the sale, and you get lucky, then you have the whole room to yourself and you know, you're feasting. But if it's a popular book sale, if it's on booksalefinder.com, everybody's going to know about it. So you got to get there early. That first 15 minutes is probably the most important, in my opinion.
That's key. You you mentioned religious books, and I actually I keep finding that I'm restricted. I guess because I'm a new seller, I haven't sold a whole lot, but I get the red restricted flag a lot on the religious related books. Even honestly, it's just if it's written by. I don't know. I guess.
Yeah, that must possibly be a new thing. Yeah.
I scan them anyway, just in case. Yeah. I hate to say it, but I've only sold 4 books on Amazon, but I've probably only listed 12, right? But three of the 4 have been returned. I hate it, but I think that's Amazon, right? I think it's a different customer mindset on Amazon.
100%.
Because they make it so easy to return, right?
100%. You know how many returns I get just because Amazon didn't deliver it on time? I mean, granted, I don't lose anything in that case, but it's still just like, you know, another thing that gets, you know, hold
pretty
back.
Pretty frustrating.
Inventory. Another thing that's got to get really, I mean, granted, with FBA, they take care of all of that for you, but it's just like, you know, just another thing. And the other, you know, not so great thing is sometimes the books will get damaged, and because Amazon's packing and shipping it for me, I have no control of that, you know, and, you know, those type of situations happen too.
I do know that, Amazon merchant, Whenever Amazon fulfills it, which one's that? FBA?
Amazon, FBA. Yep.
That if it sits there too long, they start to charge you a little bit of a holding fee, right?
So
you're able to find books that don't sit too long, I assume then, right?
Yeah, that's the other reason I invested in the Scout IQ software is because I wanted to try and find books that, you know, we're going to sell within 6 months, 3 months, even better. So the eScore does help me with that. But the thing with Amazon, I mean, I don't know if they're going to do it every year, but since I've been with Amazon, every year that I've been with them so far, they offer a period of time where you can dispose stale inventory for free.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are some, you know, and also the storage fees that they charge are really small in the grand scheme of things, especially if you get over 1,000 or more in inventory and you're just, I mean, the penny small stuff after a while, it's just like, you know, it's, you're kind of nitpicking, you know, trying to pick up a penny and passing up the quarter kind of thing. But
yeah.
But yeah, so far every year I've been on Amazon, I've been able to, dispose stale inventory for free. So I don't know all the policy in detail around that, but so far I've had that opportunity every year. So for me, the long-term storage fees aren't always an issue, to be honest. Okay.
It's a little negligible then, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's ways around it. There's ways around it. And you can always, you know, you always need to be going into your inventory and refreshing it. If you don't have a repricer that automatically does that for you, you can go and manually and reprice your stuff, relook at your listings, refresh it. Same thing you would do with eBay, you know, kind of keep your listings fresh. And that sometimes can end up making a sale in a day or two. So
that's true. Ken has a question for you.
Yeah.
How well do books sell on eBay if one does not sell on Amazon?
So like 80% of my store is books on eBay. I have a different sourcing method than most. So I can kind of afford to have low dollar book items in bulk than most people. But yeah, I mean, books sell well for me. I mean, especially vintage and antiquarian books. You know, if you are in an area, even textbooks, oh my gosh, like if you're in an area, if you're in a college area, you need to be networking with people and seeing what they're doing when they're trying to get rid of books, because it's really sad how many end up in dumpsters and landfills and stuff like that, because people really view books as just junk. So a lot of opportunity to get free or very low cost inventory and selling that stuff. So, you know, and books are nice because, you know, you just put up some big bookshelves and throw your inventory on there. I mean, it's not as bulky as if you were to have, you know, other big electronic items and stuff like that to store. So
That's a pretty neat idea. I never even thought of that. So there is a college right here in the town, Columbus State University. And, you know, if I've timed it right, I'm sure I could probably set up some sort of booth or an ad on the neighborhood app or Facebook Marketplace
Next door,
that says,
I
guess I would have to be, I'd have to think about that, because you'd have to make it worthy of them bringing the book to you as opposed to trading back into the bookhouse.
Right.
But then I'm just glad to hear that there's still a good market for textbooks and not everything's gone online.
I was
really afraid at one point in time when I started looking into Amazon books that, you know, the good books are going to be online, right? Mm-hmm. Not physical, tangible books. So.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a few new faces here. We got Kang here with the FI Resellers. What's up? Hope y'all are doing well today. What book or question for you? What book or series made you fall in love with books and reading? Good question.
So I think the very first, I was probably 6 or 7 years old, and my best friend's mom bought me the American Girl series. It was Addie. And she bought me the whole set, the whole series. And I read those books. I still have them.
Mm-hmm.
And I read those books front and back, cover to cover, a million times. So I think that series, American Girl, is kind of what got me really into loving reading. What got me into horror was probably more in high school. Now I'm a big, huge thriller and horror fan with reading. And my very first book that I read was Pet Sematary by Stephen King. Mm-hmm. And that after that, it was, yeah, I have this whole area of Stephen King here.
That is a good one. I will admit that reading has not been something I just sit down to enjoy, but there is one author that no matter what, I just have to read his book, and his name is Dean Koontz.
Yeah, Dean Koontz.
And I just can't, I think it was Phantoms by Dean mm-hmm. Koontz that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'm like, right after reading that, I'm like, I got to read more. Of yeah. him. I'm like, that, mm-hmm. that was a really, really good book. Mm-hmm. I think you got their follow-up question. What's the earliest memory of reading something you enjoyed? The Annie books. I think mm-hmm. that's a good yeah. follow-up to that. But Harry's here. Hey, Harry, how are you, buddy? And Jeff with eBay Addicts has shown up
yeah,
as well.
What's up, man?
We got Cajun Reseller up in here saying, okay. Katie, a bunch of book emojis. I do appreciate everybody showing up tonight while we're talking to Katie Reeds. So, additional questions about personally, I will state that how do you, let's talk Amazon, just generically on on Amazon. Yeah. How do you feel is the difference between a return on Amazon and a return on eBay? Is there almost like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I kind of feel like eBay is more, it's easier to handle than it is on Amazon. How do you feel about returns on Amazon?
So returns for me are seamless because I exclusively do FBA.
So they 100% take care of it no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you don't resell the same books on eBay, obviously, if you turn it into FBA for Amazon.
No, you can't cross-list that. Yeah.
Mm-mm. And so how do you choose which one you sell on Amazon versus eBay? I would assume that when you picked it up, you had Amazon in mind.
Yeah. 100%.
But somewhere down the line, you changed your mind. How do you mm-hmm. make that decision?
So I always scan for Amazon first. And then I have my pile of Amazon profit books. And then I will look at for eBay. It really just becomes repetition after a while because mm-hmm. It may, I pull out my eBay app and then I'm just scanning the barcodes with eBay instead of the Scout IQ. Whatever didn't do well for Amazon, I rescan them again to see if they'll do good for eBay. The nice thing about Scout IQ is, assuming I have enough time, there's a feature within it that you can click a link. It will connect to eBay sold listings, and you can see within Scout IQ eBay solds as well.
Okay.
So I do use that feature when I'm out thrifting or when I get my free books with my free book pickup service because I have more time. At library sales, I'm not going to lie. I dive in. I scan strictly for Amazon, whatever's Amazon that's good for FBA. I throw in my car or my bag or whatever. And then I will do another walkthrough strictly for children's chapter books, certain Bibles, vintage antiquarian, because those aren't always grabbed right away. So I kind of go through and do a second walkthrough of stuff that I've sold in the past on eBay or I know will sell. 90s nostalgia chapter books, your Babysitter's Club's Boxcar Children, Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew. I mean, that's still selling all day, every day.
Really?
Yeah.
So I truly would have imagined that those would have been like bottom of the barrel. Because there's just so many of them, right?
And that's why I can find them, because nobody, nobody ever that's not the first choice people grab when they're at a library sale.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good trick. Go for what everybody isn't going for.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. We have Tina at the Lake Exchange popping in here to say hello.
Hey, Tina.
Oh, yeah. Smash that thumbs up, everybody. I appreciate that. So let's talk about scanners. And I in my day to day, I work in IT hardware. And so I have scanners. So I know how scanners work.
Sure.
So, but you had this really cool one, I think that fits on your finger, like a ring or something like that. Let's talk scanners. What's been your life cycle and the type of scanner you started with and how you eventually moved to the one you're using today?
Yeah, so before I had Scout IQ, I was strictly using the Amazon Seller app. They have, you know, the technology within the app. You click the photo button and, you know, it reads the barcode for you within your smartphone. You use the camera on your smartphone. My goal was to get a Natamoo scanner. So I forced myself to
Wait, what did you call it? Scanner?
Natamoo. N-A-D-A-M-O-O.
Is that the brand name?
Yeah.
Okay. Never heard of that one. Okay.
So that was my goal, is to get a Natamoo scanner. And so I forced myself to sell a certain amount of profit to justify the purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like $60. It put me back like $60. And then eventually Scout IQ started integrating a scanning feature within their app. So you didn't even have to have a Bluetooth scanner to use their app. And then they also had the ability for it to scan just the ISBN number. If there wasn't a barcode on the book, you could just scan the ISBN number that's inside the book. And then they added the feature of being able to scan the front title of the book, just like Amazon Seller app. Mm-hmm. So my apps were kind of, after I bought my Bluetooth scanner, of course, the apps, I didn't really need the Bluetooth scanner. But then, you know, I found that it takes a little bit more time when you're using the app features. At the end of the day, the Bluetooth scanner was just faster. That's mm-hmm. what I was finding. And then back in February, I purchased, I made enough money to justify paying for it. I purchased an eYoYo scanner, and it is the Ring scanner, and it is so cool. I mean, it's fast. Yeah. It's a fast scanner. And when you use, you know, I typically use database mode. Like, I download a database from Scout IQ when I'm at library book sales, unless I can connect to their Wi-Fi, because most library book sales are in a basement that's cement.
Yeah.
So you have no service. So I use database. So database is super fast. Plus that eYoYo Ring scanner. Oh my God, forget it.
How much did that set you back? How much was that eYoYo scanner?
So I think it was like $115. Okay. So it took, you know, I waited. I waited probably 3 months, like, before I actually made the purchase, because, you know, I try to justify equipment investments and things like that. And it was
absolutely
nice having, it was nice having a second scanner, because my sister helps me source too.
Mm-hmm.
So now she can have my other scanner and, you know, go to sale, like, cause I can't be everywhere all the time. So because her and her boyfriend like to go out and thrift and source and stuff like that, she will always pick up books for me that she finds. So now she has a Bluetooth scanner too. And so, you know, just finding ways to,
you're going to double team it.
Yeah. And well, that's good. At the end of the day, right?
Absolutely.
And but yeah, that's how it kind of evolved for me. That Ring scanner, someone who mentored me, Matt Adolph, he was the first person that showed me the Ring scanner. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no way, man, that's crazy. And he's like, yep, this, you know, it's fast too. And I thought he was full of it. And then, you know, over time I saw a couple other people, I think it was Latin Pickers. They had a Ring scanner, and then Roamer talked about it. I'm like, you know what? I need to check out this Ring scanner, because everybody, and it's, you know, it's nice. I mean, it's small. It's, you know, you can just put it on your finger and just.
And I honestly, probably the biggest selling point and the reason why they made it in the fashion that they did was it leaves your hand available to hold more, to do something else.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think that's an awesome type scanner. And 115 is not, I mean, I could totally get it why you had to justify the purchase, but in the world of scanners, that's very reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say hello to Wyatt. What's up, guys? Thanks for stopping by, buddy. Appreciate that. And Angelo's here too. Hey, how are you doing, Angelo?
Hey, Angelo.
I do appreciate everybody dropping by. If you got any questions for Katie, leave them in the chat. We'll make sure to go over them. I got so into the conversation. I missed something I wanted to ask you in the beginning, and it's about your YouTube channel. You know, not every reseller starts a YouTube channel. And I was curious, what motivated you to start your YouTube channel?
Other people.
Oh, yeah?
So, I mean, I've been aggressively reselling for 2 years. And I thought, I used Instagram to just document my journey. But then people were actually starting to come to me for, like, advice. And I think it's just the network of people that I was kind of associated with. I started like having imposter syndrome at first. I was like, really? They don't, like, I still do a 9-to-5. I'm not a real reseller. Like, people are asking me for advice. I'm brand new to this. Like, I just kind of felt like I wasn't qualified, you know, to be helping people. And then, you know, I talked to some friends and they were like, even if you put yourself out there and just do it as like, I'm just documenting my journey. This is what I know. And, you know, just go through the motions of it. You know, so what, you know, you don't have to claim to be a guru. You don't have to sell courses. You don't have to sell, you know, guides and all that stuff. You can just be yourself, do your thing, and you might help other people along the way. And I was like, eh. I was like, no, I don't know. And I was like, I don't have the fancy equipment, right? I don't have the microphones and the cameras and the, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to put my face out there. I have a corporate job. What if corporate finds out? And, you know, there's just a lot of things.
Yeah.
And then in October, Dom, Primetime Treasure Hunter, reached out to me and asked me to come on his channel. And I've known Dom for a while. He's a really, really great guy. I was like, I don't know, Dom. I don't know. He's like, come on. He's like, you've got knowledge. He's like, you really do. Just, you know, don't claim to be anything you're not. Just say what you know. Right. And I was like, you know what? You're right. So I went on his channel and it was just, it was so much fun. It was so much fun. Everybody was really supportive. And I was like, you know what? I think I need to consider doing this. And then I kind of thought back to how, when I first started, I went to YouTube because that's where you get all your free knowledge. And I typed in the search bar selling books on eBay and I found like 3 videos from 5 years ago.
Right.
And that's it. And I'm like, how is nobody talking about selling books on eBay? And I mean, there was a couple other videos, but they were like not good videos. I mean, there wasn't really any. So I kept thinking about that. And I'm like, you know what? I need to put out videos that I wanted 2 years ago. I really should. I should put content out there that I was looking for. So, you know, I went on Regina and Derek's live on YouTube and everybody was just really encouraging with that. And they're like, you know, Katie, you're good at YouTube. You should try it. You should go for it. And so eventually January 31st, I made my first intro video. And then since then, I've just been kind of, I decided that I wasn't going to make the channel just reselling because that's just not who I am. Books in general, writing. I'm a writer. I love writing and I love reading. I used to be a book reviewer and a better reader. Like authors actually paid me to read their book and give them feedback. I used to do that. I'm just starting to get back into that now, now that college is starting to wind down and I have more free time again. So I wanted to just do all that on my channel and have all 3 of those, you know, different aspects of my channel. And I know people kind of like feel that's not always the best thing to do. Like you just need to have one niche and then you need to make a totally different separate channel for that. But that's just not who I am because I feel like, you know, I feel like I can have a better following and a better audience if I just talk about everything that I am, and that's really everything that I am as far as books. And that's my brand. That's who I am. So,
I can totally appreciate that.
I
we're on the same page a lot there.
5 months in, I kind of like it. So.
You're enjoying it too, I hope. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I've met really, really great people. I mean, it's how YouTube's how I met Dante. I mean, I can't, you know, it's just, it's really cool.
Good deal. Good deal. Jeff's let me know. He said, I did put your link in the description below. Wrong link in the description. I can fix that. I'm sorry. I tested it out before I posted it, and I apologize. No, I can fix that at the end of the video. Thanks, Jeff, for helping us pick that out. I definitely don't want that to be wrong all the time. Jimmy's up in here. Thanks for stopping by, Jimmy. I appreciate you, my friend.
Hey, Jimmy.
Oh, he needs a tissue.
Okay.
hey, Kayla, what's up?
Hey, Kayla.
How are you, girl? Thanks, everybody. Love it when people are on the same page. Yep, it's totally a brand. So the on the same page. Ba-dum-chink. That made me want to. That reminded me of a question. The Katie Reads channel, the name. So I can get where that comes in from books, R-E-A-D-S. And it just has me curious, though, because R-E-E-D-S is honestly how I thought maybe was your real last name, which I don't know what your real last name is or not. But okay. But it just, I think that's a great, did you have other channel names you hemmed, haw, and thought about it before you landed on Katie Reeds?
So it's so funny that you say that, because my sister is a graphic designer. She makes all my logos, does all my stuff for YouTube and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started Better Reading and I started my Bookstagram, that's where my Instagram first started, as I was a Bookstagram. I was just posting about books and reviewing books and stuff like that. I didn't know what I wanted to name it. And like, everybody had cute little, you know, bow ties and books and like cute little book names. And I'm like, I don't know what to name this thing. Like, I am not creative. I don't know what to do. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. Just Katie Reeds. So literally I just was like, whatever. And this is back in like 2016, end of 2016. And I'm like, forget it. Katie Reeds. I'm just going to put that in. And I told my sister that, because about 4 or 5 months in, I was like, I really need a logo. I need people to know that, you know, I want to look professional.
Right.
And that's when I developed my Linktree and my Fiverr and did a bunch of stuff like that. And so I told my sister what my name was, and she was like, really? I'm like, that's it. And I'm like,
sometimes I think simple is the way to go. It's memorable. Yeah. It's something that, if let's just say, if you were to get a url.com, that is actually a really good short. Everybody's going to remember it. url.com.
It's worked out in my favor. I wasn't thinking that when I did it, but it's just like, I don't know. It's just worked out. Like, it's just kind of like this. You know, I think it's because it's short, it's sweet, it's not like super complicated. Mm-hmm. It kind of works. So.
And you got fans.
Thanks.
Kayla says, I love the name Katie Reeds. That's awesome. Pequa Resellers. What's up, Danny? Thanks for stopping by, buddy. Appreciate you. All right. I have created a game for Miss Katie Reeds, and we're going to bust out in a game. Everybody can help her, but. Before we get started, I got a little intro. All right. So the name of this game is called Judge the Book by Its Cover. All right. So I know it's a little cliche, right? I got a PowerPoint and everything. I'm just going to leave it like this. Hold on. I almost gave away all the answers.
Oh, man. I should have looked harder.
That would have been... Let's come on.
How are you, man?
Go into presentation mode, will you? All right. Nope. There we go. Sorry. All right. Now, here we go. Okay. Presentation mode. All right. The game, Judge the Book by Its Cover. Katie, what you have to do is I'm going to present to you two books from a category of books. Maybe the last one's not. I ran out of ideas. And you have to judge which one of the two sold for the most money on eBay. Okay. I included shipping because I feel like shipping should be part of the cost. And so the first one is coloring books. Which coloring book do you think sold for the most money? The first one is a My Little Pony coloring book from 1986 versus a Lisa Frank coloring book and activity book from 2019. And guys, in the chat, if you want to help her out, maybe she doesn't need the help. I don't know. But go ahead and throw them in the chat.
I'm going to guess Lisa Frank just because her stuff hasn't been made anymore. Lisa Frank's just like a really, really hot brand and a really hot item. So I'm going to guess Lisa Frank.
Lisa Frank is something I didn't ever personally play with, but the girls back when I was in fifth grade, they were all over the place.
I have the two pocket folders and Lisa Frank notebooks. Mm-hmm. Cool or you weren't cool.
Yep.
Okay. Lisa Frank.
Dante wants to know when was the soul comps taken.
My ain't letting nothing pass. He wants to know. The rules better be on point. He already got the screenshots for me.
Did he? Is he feeding you text messages and stuff like that?
Babe, don't worry.
Well, I do.
We're not eating there, promise.
when the answers were showing. So, Dante, the game was created last night, so the comps are 24 hours old. How about that?
All right.
if that helps you out. That's crazy. When were the comps created? Oh my god. The peachy folders. I don't know peachy folders.
Oh, I don't remember. Why does that sound familiar? I don't know.
All right. So this one is
what?
My Little Pony for $15.
That's crazy. I would have thought Lisa Frank would have sold.
Yeah, I did too, to be honest with you. I was surprised. That's why I threw it in here. See if I could trick you a little bit.
Yeah, at least it's kind of close though. But Yeah, wow.
Hmm. All right, here's the next one. Which comic book sold for the most money? You've got a 1986 UK version. Obviously,
clearly,
I forgot to rewrite that. But this is Venomized. It's a UK version of the Venomized Marvel comic book. It's modern. And then against Captain Britain, also from the UK. So which of these two comic books do you think sold for the most money?
So I am not good with comic books at all. Mm-hmm. I was not a comic book reader. I barely understand the Marvel universe. So I'm going to need the chance.
Sorry, Rick. That was my mistake.
You had to help me with this one. Pony. Okay.
The My Little Pony Venomized Pony. Yep. The one on the right. He's guessing the Captain Britain.
Okay.
The newer one. Well, granted, Dante, I apologize. That date is from the previous slide. I just overlooked it. They're both modern, by the way. They're both recent. All right. So what's your guess, Katie?
I'm going to go with the FI resellers suggestion and Kayla. Looks mm-hmm. like Kayla just said Captain Britain too.
Mm-hmm. She sure
I'm going to go with that.
All right. Let's see here. You would be correct. Captain Britain.
Wow.
3186 and the Venomized comic book was 2154.
Wow.
You know,
that's crazy.
Comic books are a hit or miss, to be honest with you. They're either going to be a whole lot of money or they're going to be almost nothing. I see comic books in my Goodwill and they want $20 a comic book, no matter what they are. And I'm like, Mm-hmm. All right. The next slide. Now, I did watch a video of yours recently where you went and bought a whole bunch of Louis L'Amour's. So I thought it was only proper to put in here.
I love it.
Some Louis L'Amour books. So which Louis L'Amour book sold for the most money?
And I love that you put hardback because that is relevant.
That is absolutely.
That is relevant information.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I had to make sure that I wasn't accidentally looking at a comp that was paperback versus hardback. So
Right.
I got you covered, Katie.
I got you.
So the first one is Hondo. Classic of the West, Hondo. It's a hardback book. Mm-hmm. Or the collected short stories of Louis mm-hmm. L'Amour, also in hardback. Do you want to look at the chat?
I'm torn because I think I used to drive a Honda. I could use a Hondo.
We all could.
Everybody's saying Hondo. I'm inclined to think Hondo just because I think that one was published before the other one. And that one probably is a little bit more rare. The collected short stories is a little bit more mass produced, I think. So
okay.
I'm inclined to go with Hondo.
Hondo is your choice. Let's see if you are correct. You are correct.
Nice. That's what I thought. Yeah. Because I just looked up the comps on the collected short stories because that's in my auction right now.
Look at you.
I remember that one. That was a little bit more mass produced. So nice.
Good deal. Good job. I think you're two out of three so far.
Yeah. So far.
All right. Here's the next one. Which magazine sold for the most money?
Go Sports.
You've got a Sports Illustrated with Michael Jordan on it from 1992 and a People magazine with Michael Jackson on it from 1984. Which of these two do you think sold for the most money?
This is a tough one.
It is. MJ versus MJ.
Like what makes one more valuable than the other? Is it the person? Is the fact that one's passed away and one is still alive? Is it the fact that it's People versus Sports Illustrated? Is it the year? Is it the condition? Is it what the content is? Is it because, you know,
maybe, I hope y'all are writing this down because this is some good notes right here. Our thought process.
You know, what's the content, the context, you know, his terrifying brush with disaster. Like, was this a really juicy story? And this was just like a fun Michael Jordan article. Like, you know.
Well, I do remember his terrifying brush with disaster. Do you remember when his hair caught on fire doing that Pepsi Cola commercial?
Yeah.
That's probably what that was referring to. I don't remember what year that was, but that could be it.
I love how people are saying MJ because they're definitely both MJ.
Yeah, they are. MJ, so MJ, nice, MJ, Kayla. MJ. Nice. Oh, Angelo says Jordan. That's Angelo helpful. Says Jordan. That's a toughie. Dante says People Magazine.
I'm going to go Jackson just because of the context of the story.
Oh, Ken says you can't lose when you pick MJ. Yeah. That was karma with the hair thing.
I have to feel like they're close though, but okay, I guess I'll go with Michael Jackson. I'll take a wild guess on that one.
Okay, so you go with Michael Jackson.
I guess, yes.
All right. The answer is the Michael Jordan magazine.
Wow.
By a good bit more too.
Wow. Yeah.
$24.93 by $10. Now imagine that the person selling this Michael Jackson People magazine thought they had something better than they had. And truly, I would have probably thought the same thing too, but you're right. You have to think about a lot of details.
Yeah.
That you can't, I mean, literally judging the book by its cover is not something you can do in something like this. So,
yeah.
So I think everybody who said MJ, I'm not going to count that answer as correct, but if you said Michael Jordan, you are correct. And I think this is the last one. Yes, a little bit of different because I ran out of book categories. We went with media. Cool. Media
is good.
So which CD sold for the most money? You have the Metallica Greatest Hits remastered in 2017. And you have the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon remastered in 2003. Now, both of these are brand new sealed. And that's important too for comps.
Very important. So wasn't 2017 their last concert for Metallica too? Like, wasn't that their last tour that they did?
That I do not know.
If someone in the chat knows that, because I think that.
Yes, Dante, both of these discs are still sealed. Listed as new. Sealed. It do look crispy.
It is
pretty crispy.
I'm curious because I don't know when Pink Floyd stopped touring, but I remember Metallica because some of my friends got to go and I didn't get to go, and I was really, really mad about that.
Yeah.
I
think it's got the chat stump too. They're about half and half.
I'm gonna take a guess again, and maybe just because I'm biased because I do like Metallica better, but I'll go with Metallica.
All right. Let's see. You got some people.
I got some people
agreeing with you here.
So I'll be in good company if I'm wrong.
There you go. All right. So the one CD that sold for the most, whether it be Metallica Greatest Hits or Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon, the answer is Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, Angelo knows his stuff, man.
There you go. Thank you, Angelo. Wow. He did get it right. Hefty difference too, $26.99 versus $59.99. I don't know if I would open the disc after I bought one for $59.99. I would probably buy two. One, keep it sealed, and then the other one that was already open to play.
Yeah,
it.
No doubt.
Right?
No doubt. That's crazy.
All right. There is the judge a book by its cover game. I hope everybody had a good time with that.
Thanks so much. That was fun. That was
a little different. Got your brain moving. It helped us understand your thought process too.
So thanks.
There you go. Watch out for Dark Side of the Moon. Probably makes a huge difference in the fact that it was sealed.
Yeah.
Box sets are probably more valuable than just one CD. So there's a lot that goes into determining the comps and resale value of an item, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Sal. What's up, buddy? Thanks for coming out tonight. Appreciate you, man.
Hey, Sal.
Well, I have a segment that I like to call Hot or Not, where we share some valuable bolos with you or some items that are not so hot. So we're going to jump on that next.
Hot or Not.
I probably need to get, did you say it was your sister who's a graphic designer?
Yeah.
I probably need to get with her and redo that intro. That's probably the oldest intro we got. Well, this is a segment where we like to share bolos and just things that are not so hot, because it's important to know what, you know, things we may have failed on that we want to share with the crowd, and so that you don't fail too, right? And so I will start with the fact that I have a hot item. And Katie, if you don't have one, think of one. I'll come to you in a minute. But this is a hot item that I think everyone should look out for.
Yeah.
And this is called a Medicus golf club trainer. Okay? It's not just a regular golf club. It has a break in the middle that help that it basically trains the golfer on the proper hitting swing and whatnot.
Wow.
This is a single hinge, and they also make a dual hinge. And these definitely, if you ever see in the golf club section one that has that break like that, it's supposed to be there. Pick it up. Pick it up. Wow. Because this one is the cheapest one, and it's going to be $30 easy. The dual hinge is worth about $45 to $50. So my hot item that I suggest everyone to look out for is called the Medicus Golf Trainer. It's a little hinged golf iron for you. So there you go. Keep an eye out for one of those. You got a hot item, Katie?
Well, it's kind of a weird hot item. And
we like weird.
Rare. I don't necessarily know that it's like something you'll find anywhere, but this weekend I picked up a bunch of deer hides from a friend from the 70s and 80s. They were her dad's. So it was kind of tough for her to get rid of them. But he had them, they're tanned, mm-hmm. I guess. Like there's a bunch of different colors. This is probably more of a gold, and then you've got like some natural colors. But they're some of them are probably brain tanned, and then some of them are probably commercial. I had one of my friends is very knowledgeable about hides and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And she came over and tried to give me a little bit of info. And then she texted me later after she came by and gave me a little bit more info so I could kind of know how to list these properly.
Right.
So that way, write keywords, SEO, all of that. And I think I'm going to throw some on Etsy too. But yeah, I bought these for $10 a piece. And when I was first negotiating with my friend before I purchased them, they were selling anywhere from $45 to $55 each on eBay. So I got
that is an interesting item.
I got 13 of them on Etsy. They're selling for a little bit more. Just kind of depends on size and color, and I got deer hides.
But that's awesome. That's why I have this segment, because there are so many good items out there. There's no telling when you may, that to me is something you would see at a yard sale or a flea market more so than you would say a thrift store, right?
Yeah.
But I'm definitely going to pay attention to them from now on.
Yeah. If you can get them cheap enough. And I mean, just my friend that came over and looked at them, she's Ojibwe. She's Native American. And she uses them to make moccasins or for the backings of regalia when she makes beaded earrings and things like that. But some people just use them for a lot of different craft reasons. And it doesn't necessarily matter if it was brain tanned, like if they actually used the deer to soak and tan it, or if it was commercially tanned with chemicals, the value is still pretty good either way.
Okay.
So that was some good knowledge for me. So there's my weird bolo.
That is excellent. That is excellent. I can appreciate that. I'm here in Columbus, Georgia. I'm from the South, and we say y'all a lot. And I grew up deer hunting, and we would sometimes do that with the hides. We for whatever reason, whether you wanted to hang them on your wall or some people would put them on in their trailer or whatnot when they're in their what I would call the hunting trailer, right? We won't go there anyway. but no, I would have honestly never thought of the resale value in them because I grew up with a lot of people just, I guess they would make their own in that, in that regard. So that's a neat one. That's a really good one. Tay said y'all can make them into a loincloth. No, Kayla said that to Tay.
Whoa.
Maybe she didn't want me to say that on, I'll point that one out because that was a good one. All right. That's a video in the future we probably don't all want to see. So the knot that I have, that I think to help people steer away. And I know golf is something that a lot of people are getting into because there's a good number of YouTubers out there that are picking up golf equipment these days. But one thing I would recommend is not all junior golf clubs are made equal. Okay. Not all of them have the same value as a brand name like Cobra or, well, I don't think Ping makes junior clubs, but Cobra is a good one. But there is a X-Gen is a brand that it looks fancy. It looks just like Cobra would. It's pretty. It's got colors. It's got graphite shafts. But not all junior clubs are made equal, I would say avoid X-Gen junior golf clubs. You probably won't get more than $30, $35, $40 tops for a complete set. Even in excellent condition.
Wow. Perfect.
As opposed to a Cobra set, you can get over $115, $120, $125. So just like pretty much everything, every category, not everything's made equal. So X-Gen is not one of those sets you need to worry about buying. Okay. Is there anything you may have picked up, Katie, that you could share as a knot? Maybe it either fell off the radar. It used to be good, but it's not good anymore. Or you tried and it failed for you because it wasn't as big as you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, so for a while, a lot of people were like, oh, Black Diamond VHS. and I'm not – if anyone that watches this later or hears this later or is in the chat, I'm not trying to – you know, be rude to anybody that maybe is seeking that stuff out. But in my experience and based on like a lot of estate sale people I've talked to and a lot of other resellers that deal with a lot of media, and I've also read a lot of articles on this, the whole Black Diamond VHS thing is a myth. Walter Blake Knobloch actually talked about this too. He's a Michigan reseller. And he was just kind of saying, you know, it's been debunked. Like, it's not worth thousands and thousands of dollars. And that was one thing that I've slowly been learning is like certain VHS tapes that everybody's like, oh, you know, these are these Disney ones. I mean, you can pay for your child's, you know, college expenses with this. And it's like, no, you know, it's $5 free media mail shipping all day. So
did you get sucked into the Black Diamond craze when
I did it first? I did it first because a lot of people were talking about it. This was probably like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And then, you know, getting into reselling about a year later, I started doing some like research and I was like, this isn't anything. Like, and then you just look up the sold comps, you look up a bunch of different stuff, you do Google searches, you look at a ton of different platforms, and it's just not really, it's not what people think it is. Maybe certain titles, I don't know. Right. But for the most part, it's just, it's not selling. And I think sometimes the sold comps are a little bit misleading because there is some rumor that like sold comps, even if a buyer doesn't pay, still shows as a sold comp. So yeah. I think that can sometimes be a little misleading too when people dive into certain stuff like that. But
Yeah,
I fell for that at first, and it's, you know, I've done a lot of research on that because my parents, almost every single VHS they kept from us as kids was Black Diamond. So I did a lot of research on that, and it's just not what people think it is.
Gary and I have jokingly said that that is a good way to launder money on eBay.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. Kayla, she's wondering, what? How do you feel about the Thai Beanie Babies, though?
Oh, man.
That's a horse of a different color, Kayla. Don't even go there. I see Beanie Babies everywhere, and I'll be very, very honest with you. I still find myself, like, if I come across, like, just the other day, a bin full of nothing but Beanie Babies, and I found myself going to Google and saying, most rare Beanie Baby, right? Like, what's the top four most rare Beanie Babies? And I'll get a list and I'll be like, okay, I'm looking for a bull, I'm looking for a platypus, an eagle, and a kangaroo. Okay, let's just start digging and see if any of those are in there. And lo and behold, they're in there, but they're not the exact same one, because they have to be like the very first one that ever came out or something like that. So yeah, it's that is definitely a needle in a haystack. So Cameron says, I so fell for that as a new reseller.
Yeah,
I bet you did. I did as well do the Black Diamond thing when it was crazy, like what, 3 years ago, like you said. I did find, however, the Little Mermaid sold better than any of them because of the artwork.
Do you know of the
adult artwork that's on the front of the Little Mermaid V8 Black Diamond? Yeah, I guess because of that collectible artwork, that actually all of my Little Mermaids sold. And so I don't know if they'd still sell, because I never picked up another one after I sold, got rid of what I had, because I was like, I'm not getting into that anymore.
I think 8-tracks are the same way, because Philly Flipper got a ton of 8-tracks and his were like country and just stuff that like wasn't super sought after. I got a bag of 8-track tapes for $8 at a garage sale, and some were sealed, and I had like AC/DC, Journey, Styx, Steve Miller Band, Duran Duran, like the Duran Duran.
Dude, that's a party right there.
Yeah, the Duran Duran sealed one sold for $40. Like, you know, it was just crazy, just that one alone. So I think it just, maybe it just kind of depends too about the genre or the context, or, you know, because the Little Mermaid, that's context, right? That's a special thing. Cheryl, my girl, the party.
Oh, Cheryl?
Here.
I missed her. There she is. How are you, Cheryl? Thanks for coming out. We do appreciate you. Oh, Renee snuck in here too.
Hey, Renee.
Hey, Renee. Thanks so much for coming out. Well, everybody, I do appreciate y'all coming out tonight. We're going to wrap it up with our interview with Katie Reeds. I sincerely appreciate you being on the show and talking with us about Amazon and books and your history with YouTube and how you got started with selling with books. Everybody, I would like to go ahead and take an opportunity now to remind you that I will correct the link down in the description below. And don't forget to go find Katie Reed's YouTube channel and subscribe to her if you have not done so already. We both would sincerely appreciate that. Any closing words for our guests, Katie?
You know, just keep at it and do your thing. Be you, figure out your niche, and, you know, have fun. Don't compare yourself to other people. Just do your thing.
That's excellent. Don't compare yourself. Do your own thing and have fun while you're doing it. Thanks again, everybody, for coming out tonight. I do sincerely appreciate that. Y'all have a wonderful evening, and y'all stay safe out there and have fun picking.